And good morning, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. I'm Paul Dottino. He's Jeff Fiegels, at Jay Fiegels, at Giants WFAN. 201-939-4513 is our phone number. We will be here for the next hour to talk New York Giants football. And, of course, today the players are off, Jeff.
We're not.
No, we're not. We're never off here at Big Blue Kickoff Live. Well, actually, that's not true. We are off on Saturdays and Sundays, aren't we?
A little bit. Not this last Saturday and Sunday, though.
No, what we do is we are out there at practice. We are watching intently. We're taking notes. And what we'd like to do this morning is answer your questions about what we have seen over the first 3 days, give you some of our observations, and then talk a little bit maybe about what we expect this week. Now, tomorrow, Coach McAdoo said the Giants will put uppers on. That would be shells upstairs, the shoulder pads.
No, shoulder pads, not
shoulder
shells.
Shoulder pads. I got myself confused there for a second. They'll put on the upper shoulder pads, not full uniform, you know, just uppers. And there will be a little bit more of a pickup to practice as they continue to try to ramp it up.
And a lot of people may not know this, so you're probably asking the question, come on, it's training camp. Why aren't they in full pads? Why aren't they, you know, there's a rule that you cannot be in full pads for the first 3 days of practice. So there's your answer. That is a CBA thing. So it's not a matter of if the coaches want it or not. They can't. But as of tomorrow, they can start to go into full pads or even, as you say, Paul, the uppers, which the uppers in terms of football, uppers are shoulder pads and shells are a little bit less than shoulder pads.
They're like half the thickness.
But one thing that happens with the shoulder pads is that you now have the ability to get hand position that you normally don't on a regular practice with shells. Shells only come up to about right here. They're like foam.
Right.
With shoulder pads, now the linemen can actually grab, and it does come into effect in special teams a little bit more. Guys can now, you have to be able to evaluate guys on kicks and things like that. Running down the field, they can now grab shoulder pads. That makes a big difference from an evaluation standpoint.
Hand placement.
Hand placement on every position. Cornerbacks, receivers, linemen, anything that it goes now that the uppers. And really, in all reality, the pants don't really matter. They really don't. Some of the guys, you know, now the new rules, you have to wear pads. But in years past, it's the uppers and helmets. That gets a little bit more physical. Of course, with the linemen and those guys, they'll be able to do a little bit more up-tempo hitting until then on Tuesday, on Wednesday, it'll be the full go.
It also sounds rather crazy, but folks, you know, everybody times the guys at the combine in the 40 in shirts and shorts. Well, now when you start putting layers of equipment on, the stuff does weigh something now.
Yeah.
What is it, about 15 pounds total?
No, I don't think in...
Or is it now 10?
You're dating yourself now, Paul.
Is it down to 10?
Yeah. It's so light now. Zach DiAssi, I was talking to him yesterday at practice. He got a new set of shoulder pads.
Okay.
And he said, I cannot believe how light these are. But it's like for a snapper or even for a kicker or a punter,
right,
you never really go through a lot of different shoulder pads. But when you go through a new set, it's like you can feel it. It's different.
Okay.
But they are a lot lighter. The pads are a lot lighter. I think, if anything, the helmets are probably about the same weight. But they're just manufactured and they're built better. But they are a little bit lighter. But still. It is different.
You need to start finding out what the play speed is of these guys
while they're
in gear.
And as a player, you also have to feel out that, you know, you haven't practiced in pads forever until last season. So it does take a little bit of, you know, 1 or 2, 3 days of getting used to just having those things on.
All right. So once again, our number is 201-939-4513. Also, you can hit us up on Twitter. I've given you those names earlier. Also, you can go to Twitter and go to Giants Chat, hashtag Giants Chat. We'll get your comments and your questions. Now, Jeff, before we get to the phones, and I do want to get to them quickly, I do want to say that there is one guy who, above all others of the 90 on this current training camp roster, who really has absolutely risen his level of play to a noticeable level, and that would be second-year cornerback Eli Apple, who is closing fast on the football. He's getting his hands on it, and I got to tell you, it's exciting to see.
Well, he got a new haircut, so maybe that's part of it. You know, that was the big news coming in, right? But I feel like, you know, this is kind of one of those situations where you're a rookie last year. Now you're a sophomore. You've got a full season under your belt with some trials and tribulations from Eli. A little hurts here. You know, you didn't play in all the games, this and that. But he has a little chip on his shoulder. I think that this sophomore year is special to him because he's now got a lot of things behind him. But you're right. He's lost. I think he's gained a little bit of weight.
Gained about 10 pounds, playing at around 202 now.
But he doesn't seem to have it affect him the way he's flying around the field. And just some familiarity with the defense. A second year in the system, all the offseason to be able to watch film and get some more coaching, if you will. So that's helping him. Good to see. Because when you look at that secondary for the Giants, we already know what DRC and Jenkins can do. Eli Apple was that little question mark. Can he now fit in with those other two guys and have three formidable, really good cornerbacks? I think the question going into camp now, and we'll get to it sooner or later, is that who are going to be those other guys? But the fact is that Eli Apple is flying around, and that's a good thing to see.
Yeah, he really is. And you mentioned the speed factor. He had said earlier in the spring that they had put the GPS on him, and he hadn't lost a step.
Perfect.
Even though he gained some muscle. And what I like about Eli's mentality on this is that he said that by adding the strength, he thought it would help him out not only in run support, which how many corners talk about that? You know, when you hear a corner talk about run support, you know he's a football player. Because there are so many corners who just want to intercept passes, you know. Eli Apple, he's willing to get in there and mix it up, and he wants to make a tackle against a run. So that's a cool thing. But also he said, hey, against some of these stronger receivers and even some of the smaller receivers, he wants to be able to better muscle these guys.
Sure.
You know, press them off the line of scrimmage, jam them, prevent those routes going through, into the secondary. And I'm just real excited about it. I really want to see him in pads because I want to see how that physicality translates with the new muscle that he's put on. I will tell you this. It was fun watching him yesterday. They were just doing the hand slaps off the line. Mm-hmm. You know, when the guys try to get the release and the DBs, and they're both just slapping hands. Now, that's not contact, fellas. They're just slapping hands trying to get off the line. And Eli was doing a really good job. You could see he's being very aggressive.
Well, when you look at the receivers, and not only the receivers, some of the tight ends sometimes they get matched up with once in a while.
No doubt.
That the physical part of the game, Eli realized that, hey, listen, I got to get a little bit stronger. I need to get a little bit more physical, and then by that, I need to gain a little bit of weight. But I don't want to have that taken away from me as far as and my speed taken away. So I think together with the off-season program and the weightlifting and the way that these guys train these days, that's something that you can come into the off-season and say, I want to do A, B, and C without sacrificing X, Y, and Z. And he certainly has done that. We're looking for good things about him. And, that defensive backfield for the Giants, I mean, Landon Collins is another guy that just has picked up where he left off from last season, watching him fly around the field, watching his leadership just emerge more than it did last year. So defensively, looking at that side of the ball, I thought that yesterday's practice, Paul, mm-hmm. Saturday, I think the offense won. I think yesterday the defense won the battle.
Yeah.
So that's kind of if you want to kind of put those two together and say who comes out ahead every day, I think that's kind of been the tail of the tape. Of course, Friday wasn't really a huge practice. In fact, I don't think there was any balls thrown in any kind of drill or anything. It was just you scratch your head on that one. But
Friday was just warm up.
Friday, I went out to practice. I went out to practice, and I was a little bit late getting out there. And before you know it, it was over. And I said, wait a second, what is going on here?
Yeah.
You know, but times have changed. And for us that have been around it for a long time, Paul, myself playing, things have changed. It's just the way it is these days. You got to get used to it. But more importantly, it starts tomorrow where the guys are going to get out there and things start getting ramped up a little bit. I think really, Paul, when you take away from the last 3 days of practice, you mm-hmm. kind of, well, really it's been two, but we will clump the Friday in there. I think it's really about fundamentals. It's about technique. It's about getting the routine down for these players, especially the new guys being coming out of college. They don't really understand about an NFL training camp and how things work. You kind of set the stage for what's going to be coming up on Tuesday and Wednesday and going through the rest of training camp. That's an important step for the organization and the staff to get these guys in the routine. And it's just like kind of us. We get into our own routine. You're into your in-season routine now, things like that. So it's important for those guys. The other one is, I'll never forget this, is that that first week of practice, they're almost halfway done now, it's getting the soreness out.
Yeah.
I mean, even though they're not hitting and stuff, they're still running. They're still recovering. And they're lifting. So that's a big part of football is getting that soreness now. Now, the next step of soreness, the neck, the hitting. They haven't been hitting yet. So that's the next thing. And I remember seeing the linebackers and the running backs. Those are the guys that their necks get really sore for a couple days. But they're tough. They'll get through it.
All right, good news for the players. Temperature expected to be in the 80s throughout training camp. I did not see any 90s listed on the future forecast. Now, for conditioning purposes, coach would probably like some 90s and some humidity because that always helps the stamina and the conditioning drills. But it looks like it's going to be a players' training camp, Jeff.
Well, listen, I think for both the
players. You remember those days in Albany.
Well, I remember Albany. I also remember some other places that I'd been that was really brutal, too, when back in Philly and Westchester when the fields were down low and this, like, it was the humidity never left the field. But, listen, I think that you do need to acclimate yourself to some sort of heat because, really, when you start playing some of these preseason games, you know, it can be hot. But they have to – that's a part of conditioning that you have to get used to is the heat and playing. And that's what – mental errors happen when you're physically drained. Mm-hmm. So coaches want to see how you react to some of the hotter days, and that's you kind of hope as a coach maybe you get one or two in there to kind of see how that happens.
Exactly, and that's one thing you can't control.
You cannot control. You know? I think the only guy that ever controlled weather as good as anybody was Tom Coughlin. I mean, Tom would – I swear to you, he would say, you know, we got rain tomorrow, and it ain't going to rain. It's not going to rain from 8:30 to 10, I can tell you that right now. And sure enough, up in Albany, it would not rain between 8:30 and 10. Now, in the afternoons, it was different, but, man, that man could call weather. Man, could he call some weather.
We're going to go to the phone lines, 201-939-4513. Victor is on line one, and you're first on the program. Hello.
Vic, good to talk to you again. How are you?
Good morning, Jeff and Paul.
What's going on?
I don't know. I feel that the biggest competition this year in training camp is going to be the tight end position. Now, Paul, you and I have been talking about Matt Lacoste for the last couple of years. How's he been looking lately?
Looks good. I will tell you, the tight end who has open maybe the most eyes is obviously Evan Engram because he's the first-round pick, and every time he runs a route, he catches the ball. I mean, he doesn't drop anything.
Good hands.
Good hands, good speed, good quickness, athleticism, great attitude. He talked to the media yesterday, Jeff. I don't know. Did you
I
hear
did.
Much
yeah.
of that?
Yep.
And what a young, excitable, enthusiastic player he is. And he is studying his blocking skills and technique like ad infinitum. I mean, he is just diving in head first, and until those pads come on, we're not going to see the results of that, but it's clear that he wants to be an all-around tight end. He does not just want to be a pass catcher, and I'll be honest, I love listening to him, and I think he is saying all the right things because, quite frankly, you guys know how I'm against just pass-catching tight ends. I don't like the video game tight end. I want the guy to be able to do some of everything, and he's showing me right now that he wants to.
Yep. And I, one thing that I've noticed is that he makes really good adjustments. He'll come off the field one day and correct the things. I was talking to Kevin Gilbride Jr. about him a little bit, and he had mentioned to me about the fact that this guy is a learner. He takes from what he learns in the room, the film room, and takes it out and makes the adjustments on the field, wants to get better. That's all you want to hear about young players is how they want to improve and how they want to get. And not only that, he doesn't have that aura that, hey, I'm a number one draft pick. You know, I'm just walking around with my chest out. He wants to be a good player, and that really bodes well for the offense.
But, Vic, I will add this to you. I do think that of all the tight ends in camp right now, Engram has certainly stood out. Everybody's watching him,
of course,
with a microscope.
Yeah.
But I think Lacoste, to me right now, has been the second most impressive tight end. But that's because Ellison is primarily a blocker, and they can't hit yet.
Yeah.
So
how's
he going to show his value? You know what I mean?
I'm glad to hear that. Let me say this. Let me say something that is totally not related to the Giants. But why is it that every time I turn the NFL Network on to look at the training camp live, all I see is the Cowboys. All I see is the Cowboys, day in and day out. They don't even show the Giants a little bit or nothing. What's going on with that?
Well, Vic, I'm not involved in their programming decisions, but I do know that right now, because of Dak Prescott coming back for a second season, because of Ezekiel Elliott being in the headlines for a number of reasons, because of Dez Bryant expecting a very big bounce back year, you know, the Cowboys are certainly a team that a lot of people have interest in. Remember, they are the defending division champions, okay? They're going to get their ink. So I understand how you feel, but maybe you're just tuning in at the wrong time.
Yeah, and it is.
Yeah, probably. I probably am. Listen, Paul, I want to send you something that it's a piece of memorabilia that you might appreciate. Where can I send it to?
Well, you could send it care of my name here at the facility if you'd like to do that. And I'd appreciate that. Thank you.
It's at Giants.com or what?
You could send it to the New York Giants facility. I believe it's 1925 Giants Drive, East Rutherford. 1925 Giants Drive, East Rutherford, New Jersey, 07073.
Of course, 07073.
Yeah.
Okay, you get a kick out of this. Okay?
All right, Vic, I appreciate
it.
I look forward to it.
There you go.
Thanks very much.
Now you can sit by the mailbox and wait for a package.
By the way, you folks understand why it's 1925 Giants Drive?
Well, I think you can probably do the math. Yeah.
They actually created an address and a street name for the training center here.
And, of course, if you don't want to pay the postage and you have a ticket to get into the game, you can always come and at a home game and come and see us at the MetLife entrance for our pregame show. Paul's always there. So you can, just drop it off there. He'd be happy to receive it.
And unfortunately for Vic, he's in Florida, which means he can't visit training camp, which is free. Remember, folks, training camp is free. You can come look at the schedule on Giants.com. There are bleachers set up with seat backs, so it's very comfortable to sit and watch practice.
Covered.
They have covering awnings over the top of the bleachers, and parking's free, and it's really cool. So and a lot of times, after every open public practice session, you look on Giants.com, they will indicate which of the Giants veteran legends are also going to be here. There are two every single practice.
Yep.
Who will sign autographs. You've already had your turn.
No, I'm up tomorrow.
No? Oh, you didn't go yet?
No, I'm up tomorrow. So you'd be expecting a huge crowd out there.
They may have to turn people away.
Yeah, we'll have security and everything. But it is a great experience. They do have a little bit of a NFL experience out there for the younger kids. And come on, there's a big giant slide out there, a couple other things. It's refreshments. Make sure you bring, sunblock and things like that. One good thing about Giants practices that I just failed to realize that this was happening, because I think I would have liked it, is the music. There's music going on in practice, and it's pretty cool.
That's,
I mean,
Coach Mack doing his millennial
thing. But you kind of forget about that. And then, and you go out there and start hearing the music. It's a nice atmosphere, I think. And really, the weather's been great for practices. It's been very pleasant to come out. The Giants always appreciate everybody coming out and looking at the practices. It's a great time not only to be part of the Giants, what they're doing, but you really get a good close-up look at the players. I mean, think about how much – you can't get that close during the games.
No.
And this is free. Come on out, but make sure you do check that Giants.com schedule, because not every practice is open to the public.
And you also need to be aware of the rain, because if it does rain, they will announce on Giants.com the morning of the practice, they have to move it inside to the field house, and the field house isn't big enough to have the public
come in. Yeah, you're not going to be able to go in there and
close
that one. So,
that's a bad deal.
If it rains that day, you'd have to make plans to come to another one.
All right, we go back to the calls. Line number 4, Bash is in Ohio. You're next on the show. Hello.
Hey, Bash.
How we doing, Paul? How we doing, Jeff?
Good.
Good. Question, just to have y'all two on here. It's good to hear from both of y'all. I had a question about the roster, about the ending of the roster. Get some clarity on. I know y'all hear it a lot from y'all. And I just wanted clarity on it as far as the ending roster. I know the 53-man roster from the 90, but we have the practice squad, and then you have, the game time roster. So the breakdown differential of those steps, whereas the 53-man roster, and after that, how many people's on the practice squad? Is 10 signed to the practice squad?
10.
10 to the practice squad. So 63 practicing, and then game day is only 47 get a jersey, or the number, the all 53 don't get a jersey. Only a certain number get a jersey.
Yep.
No, you have it right. 7 gets scratched. Third quarterback gets named. Mm-hmm. And you play.
Now, why is that as far as the 53-man roster and then only a certain number get a jersey on game day?
Well, that's an interesting thing, because I've talked to Jerry Reese about this several years ago. I said, I don't get it, Jerry. You got 53. Why can't you just have all 53 available on Sunday? Why do you have to scratch guys? And Jerry said it was a competitive thing that the league decided that they knew that each and every week there were going to be players who were injured and unavailable on a given Sunday. And they don't want a team to go into a game with 53 guys and then Team B goes into a game with only 47 or maybe 50 guys because they've got some guys hurt. So to try to even the score across the board so that every team has the same number of available players. They said, okay, every week you're going to have to scratch seven guys. And so whether or not they're healthy or hurt, they're bringing the number down so that it takes care of the inequity, if you will, of who's healthy and who's not. They want to be able to have the same number of players available with a helmet every weekend.
Yep. There's your that's okay. a good analogy. Yeah.
That's understanding it. And 53-man, the 10 practice squad, they can get promoted to upon if a player get injured and they go to the IR, then that replaces the roster spot and they can get someone added to the roster from the practice squad. Is that how that works as far as the practice squad making the roster as far as the scenario of Andrew Adams and Romeo Arquil last year where they won a practice squad, did they make the 53-man roster?
Well, and Darius Bowe was another one. These guys, what happens is the one rule is if you are activated from the practice squad, you have to go to the 53-man roster. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like you have to. Now, the other thing is
that Powell was on the practice squad last year. Adams and Aquara were on the 53, just exactly. to make sure you got yeah. that right.
Now, the other thing is, okay. is that the 10-man practice squad roster is pretty much anybody. It's anybody can go and grab a player off of your practice squad, but they then have to be activated to that new team's 53-man roster. You just can't grab a guy from a practice squad from the Cowboys and bring him to the Giants and put him on the practice squad. You have to activate him for at least one game, and then you can put him back on the practice squad, but he becomes basically available to the whole league. But the rule is that once you grab another player from another team, you have to put him on your active roster.
Immediately,
yes. Yep.
Okay. One more question before I go on and take this off. I wanted to ask about a couple of undrafted free agents, free agent rookies and stuff. So I know y'all both are high on Travis Rudolph, the wide receiver, but I want to ask about a couple of other undrafted and what's your chance of making the squad or even making a practice squad. And that was the two offensive linemen that they had praise for, Chad Willer, and the other one, I forget his name, Brogdon or something was a guard that we signed, and also we're thin on the cornerback position. So the cornerback that we signed from USC, Nigel Trayborne, or I'm not sure his name.
Nigel Trayborne from Iowa State.
And the two offensive linemen.
Okay, we'll let you go. We'll comment.
All right.
It's impossible to really grade the offensive linemen with no hitting.
Yeah.
You could see very little.
Yeah.
So Jeff, my take on that is I'm going to wait and see.
Well, we have to wait and see. I think that Wheeler is a left tackle, and you look at the depth there. I think that there'll be. You're right. It's really tough to evaluate these guys until some of the preseason games and see what happens as far as you listen. There's going to be injuries. It's just the nature of the game. So things are going to happen, and rosters change constantly. Now, one thing that happens when players go down at certain positions and the depth isn't there. Then there's free agents. There's guys that come in from other teams that get cut. Then that means one guy has to go. Remember this, folks. When one guy comes, someone has to go. If there's an injury reserve situation, then they can put a player on injury reserve. That opens up a spot. You can now go fill it with another one. So it just depends on your needs as far as injuries go at every position. And they're going to happen. That's just the way it is.
Now, Jadeur Johnson, who was a undrafted rookie free agent and came into camp, left camp a couple of days back and told the coaches that he wanted to retire. So the Giants would then be one down.
Yep.
From the 90 max that you're allowed to have. So it remains to be seen if they bring in a body today or tomorrow morning.
Or it remains to see which guys on the PUP list can be activated.
Or Johnson could even come back.
He could be,
that
a lot
does
of times,
happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And we don't know the situations for these people in their personal lives. Maybe this young man just didn't want to play football anymore. Sometimes there's things that he has to take care of at home. You never know. But you always wish the best for guys like that. It's a tough decision, I can tell you that. It's not an easy one, but there are some guys that just get here and they just their minds aren't in it. It's in it, and this game is a tough game to play mentally, not only physically, but to play professional football takes a lot of energy. It takes a lot of commitment. Some of these guys just realize, I look at the roster, I look at my chances of making this team. What am I doing here? Sometimes you can't blame them.
Yeah. As far as Trayborne, I just say to you that, for me, he was a dark horse guy who I really liked when I looked at his college tape at Iowa State with the Cyclones. Since he's gotten here to the Giants, I will tell you, I've been a bit disappointed. You know, because the skill position guys, the wide receivers, the corners, those guys, because there's not contact involved with what primarily they do, you can see a little more. And I will tell you, I wish that I had seen more from him at this point. But the good news is there's still plenty of time to go.
Oh, there's tons of time. We're just 3 days into this thing.
Exactly.
You know, and really, there's not – usually at this time of the year, before the preseason games, there's really not a lot of roster moves unless it's needed somewhere.
Right.
Because, like Paul said, it's tough to evaluate on a day-to-day basis. These guys are always being evaluated. But when you're not in pads, and I think you hit the nail on the head with some of the more skilled positions, it is easier to evaluate guys coverage, running routes, things like that, aside from the other positions, maybe at linemen and defensive linemen, where there needs a little bit more physical components to the evaluation. But the fact is that once the preseason games come around, that's when they're really going to say, you know what, this guy really is not going to make it, and I think we need to get somebody else in here. You start seeing – now, correct me if I'm wrong. Is there a new rule this year that there's no 65 cutdown anymore?
Right. We're going right from 90 to 53.
90 to 53. So that's actually, in a way, good and bad, in my opinion. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Do you agree with me?
I think it's more bad, but I do understand there's a good side to it also.
Well, the good side is from the player's side. That's where I'm seeing the goodness of this, is because now you get a little extra chance to get one more preseason game in there if you're kind of on the bubble.
Mm-hmm.
Now, from an organizational standpoint, now that you're on the bubble, they don't have to make a decision until that 53. The problem is you get guys that may get hurt between that period. Then there's IR stuff, and there's some things that from an organizational standpoint that you have to worry about.
And quite frankly, too, as Coach will tell you all the time, there's only so many reps, even in training camp, to go around. And when you have 90 guys that you're trying to evaluate all the time on an everyday basis, it can get sticky. In some ways, I think that the shortening of the roster, paring it down, makes it a little bit easier for a coach to concentrate on the smaller group and to better evaluate the smaller group.
I think it depends on the team, too. I think from a standpoint of this team, there's the evaluation.
They know
is
a lot about
a,
what
right,
they have
now,
already.
If you're a team like San Francisco or a team like that is rebuilding, then this is a good thing for them. They can take it down.
I agree with that.
Now, I also believe that fourth preseason game, which we all know means absolutely nothing to the starters, that'll give you one more final evaluation with 90 guys being on the roster, being able to play that fourth preseason game. Aside from you're losing 65 to 90 going into that fourth preseason game, you don't have as many guys to play, which means you have to play some of your guys that are going to be on the team in that fourth preseason game. Mm-hmm. Now you may not have to do that.
That is true. One final note about Tribune. He is a physical corner, and one of the really good things that I liked about his college tape was his run support, and when he hit a receiver, there was no escaping it. He was taking guys down. So his best attribute has yet to be seen because there's been no contact.
Yeah.
So maybe that will bode well for him.
Who knows?
In the next few weeks.
Yeah.
So don't close the book on him yet. Back to the phones. Line 3, Jason from Maine. You're next on the show. Hello.
How you guys doing today?
Good,
great.
Jason.
Good. Just a couple questions for you. The first one is, I just wonder how, when I see these guys just coming in, these brand new guys coming in, and how early the preseason games are. I mean, I think their first game is August 11 against the Steelers.
Yes.
Can you guys just like maybe describe how do the coaches and how do the rookies themselves get ready in such a quick time? I mean, when I watch the first preseason game, it doesn't look like everybody's lost out there. So it looks like for the most part, they know what they're doing out there with a different play. So I'm just wondering, can you just describe in the first couple of weeks, brand new people coming in, how do they learn it so quickly? How do they get together so they can actually form the team that early and play that quickly?
Oh, it's a good question, and it all goes with evaluation before. So when you get these guys to come into camp, not only are you evaluating them on their physical and how they play football, you're also evaluating them on their how they can pick things up. They get the OTAs, and they get a little mini camp in there that gets a little indoctrinated to what the playbook is going to look like. Now, when they first come into training camp, they start all over, but it's an accelerated class. And really, the first couple preseason games, pretty vanilla. You're in about two coverages in defense. There's not a lot of blitzing. Offense, you're probably running, maybe, I don't know, 20 plays, So that's kind of why they look like they know what they're doing out there. But, you know, really when you get in the film room, there's a lot of guys that don't know what they're doing, and those guys don't make the team, obviously. But that's kind of the answer. My answer to your question is that it's a little bit vanilla. It's a little bit watered down at the beginning, and I think that they have to keep it simple because, number one, they don't want to give a lot of things away anyways. They just want to evaluate players.
Oh, okay. So when do they actually start giving the deep part of the playbook then? Is that like deep in the preseason?
No, it's actually they will start. It's a process between A and B. I mean, right at the beginning of the training camp, they're installing the offense, they're installing the defense, but that doesn't mean they're running it. They're running them in practice, but then when the game – in fact, I can tell you this. In preseason, if it's a Saturday night game, those guys are getting – and I'm not lying to you. Those guys are getting their game plan pretty much on Thursday or Friday before the game. That's it.
Wow.
That's it. It's not – there's not a lot of game planning that goes on in preseason. It's mainly practice, evaluation. Everything is done on the practice field that they need to get done. Then the games are just a step up in evaluation. They get to see game speed. They get to see how guys react to pressure. Those are the kind of things you have to look at in the evaluation of preseason. But the game plan, it's not much. I mean, typically if the game plan is this big during the regular season, which is not, it's probably this thin for preseason. That's it.
I think the one thing that I want you to remember is the philosophy behind the playbook in the preseason compared to the regular season. Regular season, Monday night, as Jeff is saying, the coaches are going through everything they can go through to put together the playbook and the game plan so that first thing Tuesday morning, they're ready to go with the playbook. They already know because that playbook is designed not just to do what you want to do, but it's designed to attack the other team's weaknesses. In the preseason, the playbook is simply we need to find out what our guys can do.
Well, we want to find out if our personnel can run this play.
That's it.
Do we have the guys to run this defense? Do we need to look at our fifth corner? Do we need to look at this? It's evaluation is what the preseason is all about.
It's not about exploitation.
Yeah.
Of the other team.
And I will
tell you, evaluating yourself.
And it's remarkable that these coaches can really keep their head on straight from week to week because I will tell you this. These guys are actually game planning for the following week, okay? They're putting game plan stuff together that far in advance because you just can't come in on Monday and put a game plan together for a Sunday game.
No.
They are working on stuff later in the week as the week goes along. The team by Friday is pretty much ready to play. Okay, they just have to play on Sunday, you know, in a normal world. But they are actually starting the game plan for the following week. They're looking at nowadays you can get the whole season full of tape. In years past, you could only go back four games. That's kind of when you look at things. Because when you want to go back and look at a team that's played 7 weeks ago, they could have changed the color of their skin and come back. And you're game planning for something 8 weeks ago when they're really not even running that anymore.
Right.
So that's why they usually look at the last four games.
Thanks so much for the call.
Yeah, good question.
Appreciate it. Real quick, couple of Twitter notes, and I want to get back to the calls. We have Mark Pilon Cohen. Says hopefully the reason Fluker was picked number 11 several years ago, maybe he's just good, feeling now given a second chance. He's not here to be a backup to Bobby Hart. He obviously is a Fluker fan and thinks Fluker can challenge for a starting job.
Well, I think he's certainly going to – that's why he's here. He didn't come here to say, hey, I want to be a backup.
No.
I think every player wants to start. It's just a matter of it's up to him. I think he's going to have to outplay Bobby Hart to take that position. But don't be surprised if he's, you know, he's getting a lot of reps at guard, too.
Primarily at guard,
yeah,
right now.
So don't think that, you know, the right tackle is there's some competition on that whole right side, to be honest with you.
Yeah, Bisnal Vadi is here from Pitt. He was drafted on the third day, and he's the guy right now working behind Bobby Hart primarily.
Exactly. Yeah.
We have another Twitter question from The Godfather. Says, love to hear about Andrew Adams and Darian Thompson's progress, also the new running back, Gallman.
All right. Well, I'll talk a little bit about Gallman. I was asking Tom Quinn at practice the other day because really, you know, these young rookies, they're gonna show their faces on special teams first. Mm-hmm. So I asked him about Gallman, and he said to me, I don't know yet. Because I was asking him, where is this Gallman guy going to play on special teams? And he said to me that, you know, I can't evaluate these guys until they get in pads. Special teams guys, I got to figure out how they can grab people, how they can get away from people, and I can't do that until we're in full pads. But, you know, Wayne Gallman is a little bit – him and Perkins are a little bit different runners – They're a little different players as far as special teams guys. Of course, we know that Darkwa can play some – excuse me, not Darkwa.
Yeah, Darkwa plays special.
Yeah, he does. Darkwa, excuse me. He can play some really good special teams. But as far as Gallman, I like him. I think he's a good player. I think he has a knack for the goal line. You might see him a little bit here and there, but I think he's certainly a guy that you're going to see on game day play different positions, especially on special teams.
As far as the safeties, Darian Thompson's moving around fluidly. He says there's no trouble with the foot at all.
Yeah.
You know, that he injured last year after only two games. And, you know, that's a good sign for the Giants because they want his ball hawking skills. They want to be able to create more turnovers in the secondary. He's running with the first team right now as they're running through practice. But Andrew Adams is getting all the second team reps. And quite frankly, this is a guy who proved he belongs in the league.
No question. One of the highest rated safeties, you know, young guys in the league last year. And got a knack for the ball. He's got a, you know, I think that they got, listen, they didn't expect Andrew Adams to come in here and play like he did last year. I really don't think so.
He was a total fly out of left
field. From UConn, of all places. I mean, although UConn puts a couple guys in the pros every year, but I think he's got a good head on his shoulder. I was actually talking to him at practice yesterday because my son actually played some football up at UConn. He was a teammate of my son up there. But I think that he's got, you know, again, he's a second-year player, so he's got a lot of learning to do, but he's also got a lot of success to fall back on how he played last year. So, you know, that second safety position, right now Thompson's the guy, but you got to look at Nat Burhe. You got to look at Andrew Adams as viable backups or even one of them flip into the starting position if someone gets hurt.
You know, what we know about Thompson was that his forte was ball hawking at Boise State.
A lot of interceptions.
Adams showed us last year he tackles well.
Very good. Yeah.
So each one of them has a little bit of a thing that they seem to do maybe really, really well, and they'll have to maximize that.
Yep.
We go back to the phone calls, and we have Nick on line two. You're from the Meadowlands, and you're next on the show. Hello.
Hi, Nick.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Very good.
Great. It's great having the two of you on together for the first time that I've called up.
All right. It's been a while, hasn't it?
It has been a while. That's good.
That's pretty cool. You guys, I mean, wow. You know, with that secondary is nice looking. It looked good.
Yeah.
You know? Well. And isn't that great that you got it? You know, if Darian Thompson is healthy and comes out and is the player that we all hope that he is, I mean, wow. And then you got this guy, you know, Adams. He's good too, you know. He's really good too.
Well, they like that. These guys have to learn how to play together, to get that some of that camaraderie, to get that cohesiveness out there. Because the way that this game is, how physical it is, it's very difficult for every one of these guys to play all 16 games and all snaps. So you got to have some depth there. It's very comforting to me to know that you got Nat Burhe, who's a veteran, who's been in there. He just has to, you know, keep away from the head injuries that he's had in the past. But Andrew Adams is a guy that learned baptismal by fire last year, really. And that's kind of – you got to like to see his experience coming back this year. So, yes, it is. It's almost like looking at that race car inside of a car dealership. Man, that thing looks nice, right? I mean, I'd like to get that. Well, the Giants got it. They paid for it. It's there.
last week, Paul, we were – you know, you and Lance were talking about, you know, the breakout player in year two, the Landon Collins breakout player. Now, is that, like, from your rookie year to year two, or is that just year two? Because we could put OV in there. I think he's going to have a great year two, you know, on the Giants.
Well, I think when you talk breakout player, you're talking about a guy who was a rookie his previous year, or maybe was a backup his previous year and didn't play much, and now suddenly becomes a significant part of the rotation, at the very least. I think that's what a breakout player is. Well, Darian Thompson was on IR for most of the year. I don't know that he counts as a breakout player because he's a pseudo-rookie.
Yeah.
Right.
A breakout player would be a guy like Andrew Adams that comes out. And
who already was a breakout player last year.
Right.
In his rookie season.
Lance,
double breakout.
Lance said Paul Perkins, and I agree with him. That's on offense.
That would qualify.
On defense, I said Eli Apple, if you remember, Paul.
But
you
Apple.
You guys were just talking about Eli Apple.
Apple was already.
And I had a feeling, you know, because I watched him in college. He was physical in college. You guys were just talking about that.
But Apple was a starter.
He's going to be really good.
All right, he wouldn't qualify as a breakout player because he was already terrific as a rookie. I think if you want a breakout player on defense, you might want to talk about Romeo Okwara, who flashed in cameos. But now if he becomes, let's say, the third defensive end in the rotation, that would be a breakout player.
Definitely.
Yeah, have a game like that Dallas game. That was perfect almost.
Sure.
You know? It was great. And we were talking about, you know, we always talk about when Odell comes up, and I was telling you something the other day about what he did down there in Texas, you know, good things about Odell.
But we all hear
this stuff on the radio. I'm glad he wants to be the highest paid player because you know what? How many years does he have until they actually got to pay him? Didn't they extend him?
No. He has 2 years left on his contract.
Well, 2 years. So to me, good. Have that motivation, you know, and look at a lot of Jerry Rice films and see what he did and work as hard as Jerry Rice because he wants to be the best. And I've criticized him, you know, even though I love Odell as a player, but, you know, dropping, you know, passes, you know. But, you know, Jerry Rice, you guys both know. You guys go back to whenever Jerry played. You know, when he was a rookie, he dropped a lot of stuff too, you know, and he became great after that, you know.
Listen, I don't think there's any question in anybody's mind that Odell Beckham doesn't work hard. He's a hard worker on the field, okay? So don't let him fool you. Don't let anybody tell you that he's not a hard worker, okay? And I will tell you this. Any player, for what it's worth, in any league, football, hockey, baseball, whatever – If you feel like you want to be the highest paid player in the league and you feel like you are the best player in the league, then fine. Go out and do it. You know, you got to understand what your position is. It's going to be very difficult for a wide receiver to be the highest paid position in football when it's used. It is the quarterback and a defensive end. Those are your guys, you know. But the fact is that there's nothing wrong with wanting to set goals like that and try to obtain them. That's what makes professional athletes so unique is they set unrealistic goals sometimes to make. Okay, we might think they're unrealistic, but the player himself thinks it is realistic. No problems with that. I'd rather have a guy like that than saying, you know what, I'm going to try to be the fifth best this year.
I'm going to give you a word. I'm going to give you a word, Jeff, and I love this word, driven. I love a player who is driven.
There's no question. And the guy that's driven, there's a lot of components to that word, driven. What does driven mean? Driven on the field? Driven? Oh, listen, the one thing about players that people don't understand is that, and I always used to do this, and it's one of the reasons I played as long as I did. When I was working out on my own, no one else in the building, by myself, okay, nobody's seeing how hard you're working. That's drive. That's when you're saying, I'm working harder than the other 31 other punters in the league or the other 31 top receivers in the league. As long as you're doing it away from everybody and you're driven, that's what's going to make it. That's a great word. It's used in different contexts all the time. But that is driven is a great word when it comes to guys that want to be paid the highest in the NFL. They are driven. Many different ways to be driven.
And trust me, if you don't have that focus – and that relentless intensity to be the best,
yeah.
Then you know what? No. Chances are you're not going to be the best.
You get nothing for nothing. You don't listen. It's tough to be as good as you are without hard work and being driven. Being driven is getting up there. I tell my sons all this time when we're punting is a little bit different. There's days when you're going to have to. I had to go out on the field, especially growing up in Arizona. 115 degrees out. You don't want to go out and kick because it's so freaking hot. You have to be driven. You got to do things you don't want to do. That's part of being a professional.
Yeah.
That's part of being good.
Exactly.
And that's part of being driven to be good.
I give you one other potential breakout player on defense in a way because he's been injured now for 2 years. But I want to mention this because Jeff and I talked about it before the show started. Mykel Thompson, who was drafted by the Giants a couple of years back as a safety out of Texas, has worked a little bit during his opportunities at practice in the slot. Well, now this training camp here in the summer, I'm not talking about in the spring, I'm talking about since they got here last week, Jeff, we have seen Mykel Thompson work on the outside at corner. And he seems to be very quick, very fleet of foot, which he had coming out of school. But remember, he had leg injuries, lower body injuries, and you know, you just didn't know how that was going to affect him. Also had a concussion at one point. But it's interesting to me because if Mykel Thompson can prove to the Giants that he has the ability to adequately handle the outside corner spot, he becomes a great candidate for a swing defensive back and would really help the depth that the Giants have behind their three top corners.
Well, I think that you hit the nail on the head as far as depth. And listen, in football, the more you can do, the better off you are. Okay, if you can be a swing tackle, you can be a lineman that can play multiple positions. If you can be a defensive back that's a little bit on the heavier as far as physical side and still play safety, but in a crunch you can play corner, that is a good thing. You're when the guys are looking, when it comes down to cuts and stuff, oh, hey, listen, we can count on this guy to play nickel for us or dime or whatever it is, even though he's a safety. It bodes well for him. It really does. It also goes to show you what they're thinking about on the back end of the roster as far as their depth at cornerback. Tells me that they probably aren't too confident in a lot of the guys that are here.
Yeah, it's going to be a battle, and that's why, really, when you get out to camp, watch. Watch the preseason games. We're going to be watching closely because so are the coaches. And the depth chart right now is where the Giants' biggest battles are going to be. We pretty much know who the starters are. But
yeah,
the depth chart is going to be a real, real tussle.
And that's really, for a team like the Giants, they're coming off an 11-5 season with such expectations going in. You got a lot of the guys coming back. Training camp is a depth builder. That is when you're trying to build your roster and try to find out who are the backups, who are the guys are going to be able to be on this team. Because really, when you talk about the starters, we already know who all they are going to be, pretty much. You got to talk about special teams, and we keep talking about that all the time. Oh, special teams that nobody really wants. That is where these guys are going to make the team. Mm-hmm. You would know it's where it's going to happen. The third and fourth, or the fourth and fifth corners, the fifth and sixth wide receivers, the fourth and fifth linebackers. Those are your core special teams guys. Your lineman, the guy that's going to get a jersey every week, but he's not going to play any offense. He's going to be the wedge buster, the guy that's on the wedge on the kickoff return team. He's going to be on the field goal team. He's going to be on the field goal rush team. Those are the guys that you don't really know their names right now, but that will be on this roster because they played special team. Travis Rudolph is a guy that you look at who's probably, you know, he probably won't get many snaps in the game as far as wide receiver, but he can punt return. He's a good special teams player, okay? He's a guy that you look at to try to make this team because of those attributes.
Yeah, get a load of him now because his college tape is impressive. And he comes to the Giants with Lawrence Dawsey, the former Giants receiver at Florida State, who's their receivers coach, directly told him. We had Dawsey on this program. And he said, I told him, number one priority, you go up there and you absolutely excel on special teams and you will make the club. He knows the story. Dawsey's been in this league before. He understood.
Yeah.
And he told Rudolph what to do. And Rudolph was out there returning punch yesterday.
Sure. Yeah, so, I mean, that's what you got. If you are a back-end roster guy, you've got to commit yourself to being a special teams player first and then filling in at the other positions that you are here for. Because, really, if you're a wide receiver, you think you're really going to get on the field with the guys that are here? Probably not. Okay? Probably not. So if I'm a guy that's running with the receivers, I got to think to myself, all right, I want to know what I'm doing on offense, but I really probably should pay really good attention to what I should be doing on special teams.
Yeah. Back to the phones. We go to line one, Charlie from Portland, Maine.
Charlie!
Good morning, Charlie. How are you?
Hey, Jeff. Hey, Paul. How you all doing?
Good to see you again.
What's up?
Hey, Jeff, I have a – see if I can rattle your memory. September 9th, 1990, right. In your football life, do you remember what happened in that game?
September – was that the first game of the – I know I was with the Eagles then.
Yeah, you were.
Except I have no idea. Other than the fact that I know that we – that were we in Green Bay?
No, you were playing – the Giants.
Okay.
You punted the ball. David Meggett got the ball.
Okay.
He started to run, and he was taken off. And you were the last guy who was trying to tackle him before he ran the punt into the end zone.
Hold on. I love how you said before you even went to the end result as a touchdown, you said I was the guy trying to tackle him, which is correct. I was trying to.
You were.
David Meggett was not easy to tackle.
I was just going to say, Charlie, why don't you try stopping Meggett on a punt return?
You did a spread eagle for the Eagles that day.
Well, hence I took that as a learning experience, and over my career, I learned to kick away from guys like Dave Meggett.
Oh, there you go.
I just happened to be looking through old highlights, and I just stumbled upon that, and
wow.
So it was just, that's why I brought it up.
I tell you, Meggett was something special. He was good.
Oh, yeah.
And really, when you think about the 90s, there wasn't very many guys. Like, every team has a returner nowadays. But back in the day, there was maybe three guys in the NFC and two guys in the AFC. That was it. And Dave Meggett was one of those guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. But I thought maybe that would be burnt in your memory, but I guess it wasn't. Or you just denied
I try to
it
forget
all.
About those.
I was just going to say.
Hey, I got a couple of things. Hey, you were talking about, you know, players having concussions like Thompson and Berge. Well, I've been reading about this new helmet that they've come out with, Vicus 01, and players can actually use it now. And what it does, it actually accounts for rotational as well as linear impact. So more concussions are caused by the rotational impact, and this helmet is supposed to limit that. And I'm just wondering, and NFL players can actually use it because it was conducted by the league and the NFL Players Association. This helmet is available, and I'm wondering, maybe you guys can check this out, if any of our players are using it. Somebody like Berge or somebody who has had concussions, they should definitely use this helmet. It is available. It is league-approved. And I think it would probably help these guys a lot. And some of these people who are retiring, like the guy, the center for the Ravens, who is 26 years old, and maybe even Jared here. You know, the report came out about CTEs and how much that is really a problem. And some of these guys are just saying it's not worth it. So I'm hoping that some of these people will look into this new helmet and see if this will actually help.
Charlie,
so,
I will just say this, and thank you for the call. The Giants equipment staff is among the elite of the National Football League, and, of course, the Giant medical staff also among the elite in this league. So if there are advancements that are proven to be effective, I am sure they're aware of it, and I'm sure that they've educated the players. Now, I think, Jeff, you could just talk to this one issue. The players actually get to pick –
yeah, your helmet.
You know, what they want with their helmet.
Sure. Yeah, and a lot of guys, like, that they play
so,
college.
You don't force a player to say, this is the helmet
you have
to have.
No, I think that a lot of guys don't have a preference, and the Giants say, yeah, this is what we wear. You know, this is the helmet that we have. There are some guys that really, whether they have issues with concussions or not, but they just like the way they feel. You know, maybe coming out of college, they'd like to have the same helmet, the manufacturer, that helmet. Mm-hmm. And they allow them to do that. Of course, there's always been – companies trying to come up. It's good that they're trying to figure out something to help the players and this and that. I'm not, I don't know about the helmet that Charlie's talking about. I'm in the equipment room all the time. I can ask Joe Skiba, the head equipment guy, if this is something that one of the guys wear or not. But if I can remember that.
Okay. Andre from Rochester, you're on line 4 and you're next on the program. Hello.
Hey, Andre.
Hey, how's it going, guys? And I also wanted to say thanks and thank you, Jeff, for your services for the Giants, man.
You're welcome, my man. You're welcome.
Yeah, and given that DJ Fluker is so big, I've seen the interview and all I see
was
Paulie's hand. And how is he Eli supposed to see over him?
Well, I don't think – okay,
see,
listen.
Surrounding him is more of a problem.
I was just going to say, you know, that is a big human. He is so big. Okay?
345, by the way.
Oh, my God, yeah. And, I mean, he's just he's a barn. I mean, this guy is just – it's so big. Those quarterbacks, I mean, Eli is 6'5" anyway. So, and one of the things, I don't know if you noticed this, Paul, out of practice on the 7-on-7 stuff, they have those yardage marker things. Have you seen that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you know what I'm talking about? Like on the 10-yard yardage markers, they have the stick, but with the round thing on. They've got these things on, 5 of them in front of the 7-on-7. So the quarterbacks have to throw over these things and through them. But, you know, to be honest with you, Fluker, I heard he was huge until I really actually saw him up in person. He is huger than huge. I mean, I don't know how you move him. It's unbelievable.
He actually looks like an extension of the Palisades.
Ridiculous. Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, and listen, I think there's going to be – he really has a good attitude. And we talked a little bit earlier in the show about him, and I think that he's going to show some people that he's here for a starting job. And even if he does or doesn't get it, he's still going to be a very good asset to have for the Giants because he is a swing guy. He can definitely play guard. He can play tackle. And it's going to be a nice competition on that right side.
All right. Thanks, guys. And my personal thought on the Odell contract, if you could take this one guy and put him on the Cleveland Browns, and it automatically makes them better. You got to pay this guy. And those are my thoughts. All right. I'll let you guys go.
Well, we don't have to say anything more because Mr. Mayor came out and said they're going to pay him. So it's just a matter of when. And I think that listen, if there's any organization that knows how to do things, it's this one. And they will do the right thing. They certainly want to take care of Odell. They doesn't have anything else to prove, as Mr. Mara said. And the fact is that when you're a rookie and you sign a contract, you are obligated to play it out no matter what happens. Now, that doesn't always happen. We understand what some of the things that go into it. But the fact of the matter is the Giants want to make him a Giant forever. And, you know, that's this time. At a different time, they can go about that. But the fact is that I don't see anything that Odell Beckham is doing right now off the field and on the field that isn't good. He's handled this whole thing right. Listen, the guy got a $48 million contract from Nike. I mean, he's going in the right direction as far as being the highest paid. He may, if you get X and you put the $48 million onto that over 5 years or whatever he got for it, he may well be one of the top players in the league getting paid on and off the field.
Thank you for the call, Andre. And by the way, despite all of my Nike fives every day, I can't even get a 48 cents contract from Nike.
Wow, that would be overpaying at this point, 48 cents for you. You can't even get a nickel.
Remind me not to make you my agent.
Yeah, well.
Line three, Justin from Springfield. You are next on the show. Hello.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are we doing today?
Good, Justin.
It was nice hearing about Dave Meggett. I'm in my 30s. When I was a kid, he was one of the first running backs I really started watching. So great to hear his name on the show.
Sure, yeah.
So I wanted to make a bold prediction. So, you know, regardless of what happened in the Super Bowl, I still think the Falcons' offense is incredibly dangerous.
Sure.
And I think people have been a little quick to kind of write them off after what happened in that Super Bowl. But my bold prediction is, and this is kind of crystal ball because we don't have a lot of information, but I think at the end of this season, but certainly for 2018, the comparison will be made between Perkins and Gallman and Freeman and Coleman. I think the Giants offensive line is going to set things straight over the next year or so and really gel. I think we'll see a flash of Gallman at the end of this season, but I think in 2018, Perkins and Gallman will be the exclusive Giants tandem. They'll be able to rush for 19 touchdowns like those guys did for the Falcons. And I think, you know, Perkins has that more elusive qualities that Freeman has. Gallman has that more kind of straight-ahead approach Coleman has. And I just really see that kind of happening for the Giants in the future. What are your guys' thoughts on that?
Well, I can agree with you. I was trying to, you know, look at the comparison between Perkins and Gallman, and they are a little bit different. But the fact is that we know that Gallman has a knack for the goal line.
Clemson,
he did it
right,
at Clemson. I mean, oh, my God. Mm-hmm. So, and then you look at Perkins, a little bit of a breakout last year towards the end of the season. You kind of, you had mentioned maybe Gallman gets that same type of, you know, little pick-me-up at the end of the season and both going in next. I agree with you. I definitely can see, you know, the two of those guys playing in those similar, if you want to compare the two. I look at the Falcons offense comparably to the Giants offense, very similar. Okay.
Yep.
You look at a Falcons offensive line who, by the way, 2 years ago was horrid.
Right.
Horrible.
Terrible.
And they go to the Super Bowl. So there are a lot of comparisons you make there. I like the comparisons. Now we just hope that those comparisons can come true, you know. But we'll see
exactly.
What happens.
And I think you made a good point, Jeff, on another show where you said, you know, the different parts of the offense open things up for each other.
Oh, there's no question.
You know, the Falcons have a ton of weapons out in the receiver core, and that can only help open up things for their running backs because they get less people out of the box and stuff like that. And I can really just see a similar thing happening for Big Blue. I hope it does.
Well, I think that I think the offense is going to be able to get in and out of some different formations rather than that 11 personnel we saw last year, a little handicap from that. But I think that that's kind of the mindset of going into this season with the additions that they made to this offense, that they're going to be able to create different types of matchups and different personnel sets. And I think you're going to start to see that in some of the preseason games, and you're going to start certainly see a lot out of practice, which really this league is all about matchups. And when you've got guys like Brandon Marshall and Ingram and Sterling Shepard and Odell Beckham and Vereen, it's a matchup nightmare when you talk about defensive coordinators on the other side of the ball.
Sure thing.
Absolutely. Last question. I'm going to be
quickly
at practice on Wednesday. So I don't know if I'll see you guys there, but I'm going to be at my first training camp on Wednesday.
Good for you. Enjoy.
Do we know who's going to be signing that day? Does Giants.com release that or no?
Yeah, Giants.com. You know what? Let me take a quick glance here just while I have you on the phone, because I'm sure there's a lot of other people maybe aren't at their computers at the moment. And
sure.
Let me just take a look here. While I do that, I do also want to mention – when you get a chance, if you're out at camp and you see Brandon London, one of our other broadcast teammates here at the Giants, a lot of times he'll go into the crowd and he'll talk to the fans about their experiences. Don't be shy. Okay, don't be shy. Go right up to Brandon, and don't be afraid to chant, and don't be afraid to get into it, because he's trying to get a lot of fan experiences on video so we can incorporate them into our programming so that people get a better feel for what it is that they can do when they're out at training camp. Just as a little FYI. So now, Tuesday, we have the one and only Jeff Fiegels and Jim Burt.
Hey, the two Miami
My
guys.
My goodness.
The U Day.
It's Hurricane Day, which I hope it's not in rain terms.
No. Okay. From the U Days. There it is, right there.
A U Day.
All right, Jimmy Burt.
There you go.
So, but Wednesday, you got Darcy Johnson and Stephen Baker, the touchdown maker, will be there.
Exactly. So we appreciate the phone call. Have a great time at training camp. All right, Jeff, closing thoughts as we sign off for today's program.
Yep.
What are you particularly, if anything special, are you looking forward to once they put some of the pads on tomorrow?
Oh, I think it's a generic answer. It's the big guys. I think I want to see, you know, and really, there's not, if there's one thing you want to watch, okay, yeah, the team component of the practice is all good and everything, mm-hmm. but it's really not live to a point. The one-on-ones with offensive linemen and defensive linemen, that is a drill you want to go watch. That is live to the whistle. It's full go, okay? Now, obviously, no tackling, but that is a full physical drill that if you want to see something football-wise, yep. that's it. The 9-on-7, you'll get a little thud, a little hitting here and there, execution here and there, but no tackling. There's no tackling anymore here.
No.
They're tackling big donuts now out there, okay? I probably should have learned on the donut. That would have been a great tool for me.
Fiegels might have been able to stop the donut.
I would have been able to stop the donut.
But not David Megan.
To answer the question, I will be watching the offensive linemen, the defensive linemen, because there are some questions as far as depth and starters at those two positions, especially who's going to be next to Snacks and who's going to be that right tackle or right guard. Those are where I'll be looking and my focus on.
Great stuff. He is at Jay Fiegels, and I am at Giants WFAN. Remember, Big Blue Kickoff Live is here every day during training camp at 10 a.m. Eastern Time for 1 hour to talk Giants football. Jot down the number, 201-939-4513. For Jeff, I'm Paul. We'll see you next time.